wishing all Radio Aryan listeners a happy Christmas and a diversity-free New Year.
You're listening to the Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Monday, the 4th of December, 2017. We're into the Christmas week and we also have a very special guest with us again today. We are having Jez Turner gracing us with his presence once again, and I hear he's in a bit of an odd place actually. Jez, how are you doing today and where is it you are?
I am very well, thank you. I am deep in the English countryside, speaking to you from a former leper colony. Yes, it was a leper colony in the Middle Ages, and it's now a sort of place where people can go for a sort of religious retreat. And that's where I'm speaking to you from.
The marvels of modern technology, eh? You can get miles away from it all, and at the same time, when you need to, you can still get connected and we can record a podcast. What is the sort of thing that goes on there then, Jez?
Not a lot, really, to be honest with you. That's the whole point of it. It's a place where you can get away from it all and you can talk, but they don't encourage it. You only talk if there's something you need or you need help or whatever. And you speak to the monk in charge of the place to get that. So basically, it's just to get a bit peace and quiet into the countryside. You can read some books. You can pray if you want to. And it's beautiful old English architecture. And you sort of basically feel what it was like before the modern age came along, so to speak, you know, because it's interesting. I didn't realize it was a leper colony until I got there. I thought, well, we are the new lepers. We are the new heretics. We are the new outcasts, you know. It's like, you know, the French Revolution banned Christianity and closed all the monasteries. And, you know, the happened in England as well. If you're interested about this sort of place, it's an interesting sort of place to go to. Patrick Leigh-Fermor, who was a British soldier, writer, poet, bon vivant, alcoholic. He wrote a very good book about these places. He basically is famous for his travel writings. He walked on foot all the way from London. Well, he didn't swim across the channel, but he walked all the way from Calais to Constantinople. And he couldn't afford to pay the fee, so he walked. And he wrote three books about this trip. He also wrote a book called A Time for Silence about going. It's a very short book, nice little large pamphlet, I suppose, about 100 pages long. And he talked about the benefits of getting away from Paris, where he was living at the time, and socializing very heavily as well. And going to somewhere where alcohol was banned, where smoking was banned, where all the distractions of the modern world were banned. We could go and think and write. So that's an interesting book, A Time for Silence. Interestingly, Patrick Leigh-Fermor, he was one of these people who was really one of us. Only he hadn't got the courage of his convictions, really. You know, he fought in World War II on the pro-communist side, on the British side, shall we say. And he was famous for the kidnapping of General Kneipe on Crete. This is dramatized in a book, Ill Met by Moonlight, by his colleague Stanley Moss, and was made into a Powell and Pressburger film. And considering the times and the slant against the Germans and the anti-communist forces, the portrayal of General Kneipe is quite sympathetic, actually. But yes, he he writes some interesting things to Patrick Leigh Fermor, and he touches on some truths that are basically hushed up in his major works. I think he became an alcoholic because he knew the truth and didn't want to face it. For the same reason as to why many journalists become alcoholics, they realize the truth of who controls the world and the agenda, but haven't the guts to do anything about it, so they take refuge in alcoholism. Yeah, interesting guy, Patrick Leigh Fermor. I think he was one of us, but he just hadn't got the courage.
So his conscience got the better of him. He realized he'd done wrong, but didn't quite have the courage to really stand up and talk about it. So he ended up going off to one of these retreats. Is that what you're saying?
Well, he he went to retreats before and after the war, but he wasn't like that legal official who imprisoned Francis Parker Yockey. Remember when Yockey was eventually the FBI caught up with him, and was it the CIA? Anyway, it was the pretty high level political police in America caught up with Yockey, and he mysteriously died shortly afterwards. And one of the people involved in this joined a monastery, so he obviously knew something about Yockey's death, and I would like to track that man down, see what he has to say. Fitzroy McLean, another person who had a very brave, very good war record, but you know, he was a conservative, and conservatives get nowhere, really, do they? They just conserve in the last revolution. Leigh Fermor was a bit like that. He knew more than he was willing to follow up with.
I should imagine these retreats are really good. If you're used to living in a city and you've got all that noise going on all the time, to just get away from that and not hear that background hum, it really must be pleasant.
Well, this is an important point, actually. There's a colleague of mine called Mick, and he has never lived in the countryside, and he went to live in the countryside for a while, and he couldn't stand it. You know, he had to get back to London. But he's been on the council house waiting list for 30 years now, and he's not going to get a council flat. And he's quite open about this. He's not our way, but he's slowly becoming our way.
He's the wrong colour. Wrong colour, wrong gender, wrong sexuality to get a council house.
Exactly. You know, it's not going to happen, my friend. Not going to happen.
Well, I know you still remained connected, even though you're at this retreat. You know what's been going on. I would like to get your opinion on a couple of the major news stories from last week. I guess the first one would be the upcoming royal wedding. I expect you're bowled over backwards by that news. There's going to be another royal wedding, aren't you, Jez?
Someone who knows me, actually, who knows my politics, asked me, did I approve of the princess-to-be? And I replied, with a twinkle in my eye, do I approve of this communist, feminist, half-caste, Negro, Jewish, divorcee, porn starlet marrying a prince of the blood? No. No, put it mildly, no. And when you speak to people, they're a bit cagey, but, you know, a lot of people don't agree with it. They just don't say anything about it. Prince Harry, he's not going to be king, is he? And I wonder if they've made him marry this woman on purpose so he doesn't have to be king. He won't be king. Definitely won't be king. It's interesting. That's one way of putting it. Interesting. It makes me start to consider of an alternative to our current royal family in terms of resurrecting the Stuart dynasty, perhaps. Now, there is a legitimate heir to the throne if you follow the Stuart line, and he is Duke Franz of Bavaria. He's the head of the Stuart family, and he is the heir to the throne. You can look online, look him up.
Yeah, I've heard of him before. And Lawrence Gardner does a lot of work trying to tie him in with the with the Holy Family, with the family of Jesus, and tying this bloodline back to them, and saying that he should be the rightful king. He's written all these books, the Genesis of the Grail Kings, the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. I don't go along with everything that he says. He ties in the Templars with it as well. But he seems to think that the Stuarts are the rightful line and the rightful rulers. And the head of the clan is the one that sponsors his books. I think I'm thinking about the same person.
Well, if you're curious about this, there's a church in central London by Piccadilly Circus. And it's called, what is it called now? It's got a long name, but it's in Warwick Street. And it is a unusual church because it's an Anglican church, which is under the control of the Roman Catholic Church. It's what you call an ordinariate. So these are high church Anglicans who have given up on the Church of England because the C of E has gone into transgenderism, abortion, homosexuality, all these crazy things.
Calling curses on Prince George at the moment. Did you hear about that? An Anglican minister from Scotland is saying that people should be praying that Prince George turns out homosexual so that when he gets to be king, he institutes gay marriage in the church. And to pray that the guy turns homosexual is to call a curse down on this baby, praying that he gets molested and turns into a sodomite. And that's an Anglican church vicar that said that.
Well,
I don't blame people turning Catholic.
He can say that in his pulpit. He can say that in his pulpit, and he will not be dragged out of his pulpit and sent to the gulag or the guillotine, will he? But if a priest or a vicar stands up in church to the pulpit and says homosexuality is wrong, he says transgenderism is wrong, or abortion is wrong, or miscegenation is wrong, he will be dragged out of that pulpit, arrested, sent to the gulag. There was a monk in Coventry, 2015, March, and he was arrested for expressing these views. It isn't too far away that this will be happening. I mean, you know, I haven't heard anyone speak out against this woman, Meghan Markle, who's going to marry the prince. I haven't heard anyone in the mainstream speak out against. I mean, this is a porn star, a soft porn star. You know, at best, she is a lady of the camellias. At worst, she's a casting couch whore. You know, and I don't
and
know
she's
her.
Black. And she's black.
I don't know her biblically.
She's black as well.
She's black as well. But I don't know her, but a lot of people do know her. And I mean biblically, you know. And perhaps Harry's having a bit of a bad day, you know.
I think Harry, he's desecrating the monarchy. He's trying to, I think he's deliberately trying to desecrate the monarchy. That's all, and also he's been encouraged to promote diversity and told if you go with a black girl, we'll give you all this publicity and we'll film the wedding and you'll get lots of media attention, almost as much as your brother, if you go with this black girl. I think that's what he's been told.
Definitely there's that involved and there's something in there. And I don't think anyone in the royal family believe it will last very long. It's just a PR exercise, isn't it, really? And he's a throwaway reserve. He's nothing, really. So they can afford to have him do that. Aristotle, he said, the stability of any state is dependent on the morality of its individual citizens. And if you've got someone who's in a leadership position, like a role model position, these people have a added responsibility to give good guidance to their citizens, and he's not doing that. You know, he's not doing that. Edward VIII wanted to marry a divorcee, and you know he wasn't allowed to. That was the excuse given. So it's whatever suits the powers that be. They will bend, break any rules they have to get what they want, to push the agenda. And that's what it is. It's part of the agenda.
You're just overturning all traditions. All traditions. I mentioned it in SS Britannia as well about King George And he had to renounce his crown before he could marry a divorcee. And you just mentioned Henry VIII there as well. So you got all this precedent where royalty could not marry a divorcee, and it was a very serious thing. And instead of respecting his ancestors, that they had to give up the crown and they had to go through all these awful things because they were, rather than marry a divorcee, he's just not going to, he thinks he can just marry a divorcee and not suffer any of the consequences of it, regardless of everything that his ancestors have gone through. It makes me think that they maybe not his ancestors. It just makes me think, well, he is behaving Jewish, and there is rumors that he has Jewish blood, and his behavior, it seems to me, to bear that out. He's certainly not setting a good example. But someone who is setting a good example, a very good example, is Donald Trump. And I also wanted to get your thoughts on these tweets that he sent out last week, retweeted Britain First with these Muslim crimes. So what's your take on that one, Jez?
Yes, he's got my full backing. I think it's the best thing that's happened to us for a long time. I think good on him. I think very, yeah. He's, you can tell him from me, he has Jez Turner's approval. That'll make his day, won't it? Yes, it's very good. I mean, I've heard this nonsense from the liberals. Oh, the police say that this dark person attacking this Dutch boy wasn't a Muslim, wasn't an immigrant. Oh, come on. So you've got to read between the lines here. What are they saying? He's not an immigrant, so he's the son of immigrants. He's not a Muslim, so he doesn't go to the mosque every Friday or something. Look, there's a gang of dark-looking, villainous-looking, whatever they are, Moroccans, Africans, walking through a park. They spot a blonde boy on crutches, and they attack him, and they film it. And the only thing that saved that blonde boy's life was the fact one of the attackers was filming it. Because if that camera wasn't filming it, they'd have all jumped on him and beat the hell out of him and killed him. And it wouldn't have gotten the papers at all. We wouldn't even be talking about it now. Right, the fact that one of the Muslims filmed it meant that the others held back, and it was put online, and we're talking about it now. So good on Trump, because those three tweets he's put out there, right, will wake up a lot of people. I was talking to an American lady on the tube this morning. She saw my rucksack, big rucksack, then said, "Oh, I hope that's yours, is it?" And her and her sons were looking at me. I said, yeah, that's mine. It's mine. I'm white, you know. I'm not a terrorist. And she smiled. And we straight away knew, boom, boom, you know, we're on the same side. But chatting away. And I said, I like Trump. And she goes, oh, yes. We got talking. So, you know, we have to – it's the same argument we've had before in here, the same method. We are grateful for these moderate groups for pushing our agenda, even if it's only in a sort of cack-handed, half-hearted, moderate sort of way. Because once people start to wake up, once they get one piece of the jigsaw puzzle, one piece of the truth, then they begin to think politically. They begin to think realistically. They begin to think racially. So it's all good stuff.
I think it's been amazing just to see the way that the government have responded to it. How they've all been attacking him. Theresa May's been saying he was wrong. Theresa May's even been saying Trump needs to be investigating far right extremists in America. And they're calling Trump a criminal for retweeting this, because Jada Franson is apparently a criminal for inciting racial hatred. So they're calling him all these names and attacking him. And yet there's a poll released by LBC. And 74% of people polled said, yes, let Donald Trump come to Britain. And only 26% said, no, don't ban him. And the politicians have been saying, we need to ban Donald Trump from coming here. Or if he comes here, he needs to be arrested. You had Owen Jones, the famous homosexual Labour advocate. He's been making threats and saying that if Donald Trump comes over here, there's going to be riots. They're going to cause all these trouble. So you've got all these violent threats. On the left, you've got the whole of the establishment saying, we've got to ban him, he's terrible, and yet 74% of public support him and think it's wonderful, and are just all scratching their heads saying, why is it wrong to highlight Muslim crime? Why is this anti-Muslim? Surely it's a video of somebody carrying out a crime. How come it's anti-Muslim, to show Muslims committing a crime now. Is that anti-Muslim? Are they that much higher than the white British citizens now? Would they be saying the same if it was a picture of Jada Franson committing a crime, video of anyone else committing a crime? No, they wouldn't. They would be wanting to know all the details, and they'd be arresting the people in the video for committing these acts. But purely and simply because it's Muslims, apparently that's anti-Muslim. I think this would have been a great wake-up call for thousands of people. I mean, Trump has got, millions of people on his Twitter feed. I forget how many would have seen it. 47 million or 100 and something million. Crazy amount of people will have seen that. And they'll also know the name of Britain First now. I think it's possibly the best thing that he's done for Britain since he's been in office.
Yes, he's full of surprises, that man. He's full of surprises. People write him off saying, oh, he's no good. We thought he was good. We thought he was a saviour of the white race. Well, he keeps coming up with these surprises. And we have Theresa May criticising Trump because he got involved in a political debate in Europe and Britain. Well, hang on a minute. Theresa May's criticised Trump in the past for things in America. So why can't Trump criticise things in Britain? You know, it's all so one way. I mean, they're criticising Russia because people in Russia send tweets to the rest of the world or have websites or push this or push that or blogs or whatever, right? Well, why can't they? People in Britain and America send tweets to Russia and have blogs that be read in Russia. So why not? It's all very one-sided. I mean, as you say, what would it be? Imagine a situation if a group of white lads in a park had filmed one white lad attacking an Asian boy on crutches. Oh, do you imagine the outcry? Imagine the outcry if that attacker, right, had not been imprisoned, fined, punished, arrested, and this was 3 years ago. Imagine the outcry. I mean, as far as the liberals and the leftists and the elite in our nations are concerned, even language is a crime. Even pointing out that, blacks or non-whites attack whites, even pointing that out is a crime. I mean, in South London last week, Peckham, a place I know very well, a 72-year-old window cleaner was attacked. A white 72-year-old window cleaner was attacked by two blacks. They robbed him, they beat him up, they stabbed him in the stomach. And everyone is saying, oh, senseless attack, senseless, meaningless, pointless. What was the reason behind it? Look, you idiots, the reason was he was white. That's all the reason they need. Okay, so this is for you, David, what's his name? David Ryder from Peckham. 72 years old. You can go on the Evening Standard's website and you can see his face, black and blue. You can see his wounds. And, we've got to start people, get them thinking racially. We really have to start making people think racially. Well, so good. Well done, Trump. Well done.
They like to say that it's a random attack, don't they?
If you come to Britain, and they won't let you speak in the Houses of Parliament, they won't let you visit Buckingham Palace, well, you can come and speak at the London Forum, and you can visit Jez Turner's house. How's that?
I'm sure if he did speak, all he needs to do is speak to the public, and masses of people would be there. He would have masses of support, especially if it was outside of London. If he was to go to one of these large arenas outside of London, the place would be packed, I'm sure. But these attacks, they like to try and say that it's another random attack, senseless and random, but they're not random. You know, they happen every week. They happen practically every day. Every week someone white is murdered by non-whites, but it gets put across as random.
Yeah, there was a white lad in Uxbridge murdered the other day. Uxbridge, yeah, he was a young white lad. A few blacks or Asians, whatever they were, non-whites, on moped, sped up, stabbed him, beat him up, drove off. And his mother's saying, senseless, pointless. No, you let your son, because what happened was this white lad had been hanging around with some non-whites. So he got involved in this gang thing, you know. So, you know, he'd mix it, you know, if you mix with these people, they'll get you. But even if you don't, they'll get you. You know, you're white, you're a target, your skin makes you a target.
People just have to get as far away from them as they can. And the people that can't afford to get away from them, that are in the cities, are just really, really stuck with this. But, you know, it's so sad that these parents are saying another senseless attack. I mean, they really should be saying this is a racist attack. This is an attack against my lad because he is white. And these people should be punished doubly hard for this. Not we're punished for pointing it out and attacks on them, we get doubly punished. It should be the other way around. It's absolutely crazy that the citizens of Britain should be the privileged people, the ones with the extra highest wergild, if you want to put it that way. So our heads are worth more than the foreigners, but it's completely round the other way. There was another news story that I thought we could talk about, Jez, and this one I'm not too familiar with myself, but again, it features another leader of a white country, and that's Justin Trudeau. What's he been up to?
Justin Trudeau. Oh, dear. Whoa. Justin Trudeau. He is the president, I believe, of a place called Canada. Remember Canada? It used to be a dominion, a place where white people went to get some countryside to live in a wholesome environment. In London, Britain was overcrowded, and our surplus white people were encouraged to go to Australia, go to Canada, and live the good life in the wilderness there. You know, have plenty of space and land and fresh air and healthy living. Well, not anymore. You got a chap called Trudeau in power there. Who is, is he Jewish? I mean, I don't know, but he's homosexual, isn't he? Or he's definitely something dodgy. I mean, he gave a speech recently in the Parliament building in Canada. And he said, what did he say? Well, he went on and on about how sorry he was, how sorry Canada was for the way they have treated LGBTQE2 people. I mean, nobody knows what that means. You know? But it means lesbian, gay, sodomites, bisexual, transgender,
sodomites,
and other assorted and perverts and mental misfits and idiots, right? And he was crying when he gave this speech, and everyone was crying behind him, and all these politicians, they stood up and gave him a standing applause. Andrew Anglin had it spot on. He said, if I was there, I'd have been laughing. I'm laughing at it, watching it on YouTube. It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, what would our ancestors think about this? What will our descendants think about this?
What were the victims of those sodomites that raped underage children that have now been absolved of that crime of sodomy? Because the age for sodomy has now been reduced to 16. What do the victims aged 16 to 21 that have now been told that when they were raped, it was no longer a crime because sodomy is no longer a crime. How do those victims feel if any of them are still alive? That's the point, I think, because they did the same thing over here. They basically lifted the criminal record on anyone who had been charged with sodomy with a child if the child was aged between 16 and 21, because it used to be that it was totally illegal, and then it was totally illegal unless you're over 21, and then 18, and then 16. And they basically said that these people were no longer criminals, which is basically saying that the victims weren't actually raped. And some of them may have been consensual, but a large portion of them were probably raped. And yet that now they're being told it wasn't a crime any longer. And Trudeau is crying over it and saying how terribly sorry he is for persecuting the rapists.
That's an interesting point. Interesting point indeed, yes. It's, because they keep changing the laws, and then retrospectively they absolve anyone of committing a crime that is now no longer a crime, which was a crime then. So any feminist listening in, I mean, you know, just how would you like it if 5 years from now Sven Longshanks was prime minister and, passed a law that being anti-feminist was no longer a crime, and then, you know, absolved everyone of being criminals, you know. I mean, when we get into power, we're going to do a bit of law changing and absolving as well. We're going to do our own bit. Because all these race relations crimes are ridiculous. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Completely. It just goes against what it means to be human, to actually point out what you see and what you hear. And the thought crime laws go right against that. You were also telling me about this traditional Britain group. They were giving a letter to the Queen or something. And what happened there?
It was one of these British constitutional groups. I forget the exact name, but they were delivering a letter to the Queen at Buckingham Palace. Now, if you go anywhere near Buckingham Palace, the police will talk. If you park in a lay-by outside Buckingham Palace, they'll talk to you. What are you doing here? And they went to the front gates and said, we've got a letter for the Queen. We want to give it to the Queen. What happens? They get arrested. They could be Muslim terrorists. Well, look, these white guys in suits, you know, very respectful of the monarchy, handing a letter to the Queen, and they're arrested. And they've been dragged through the courts. They're at the same magistrate's court that Alison Chablow was in a couple of weeks ago, in a different court. And they were very friendly, you know, and there was a lot of similar, you know, outlook, similar sympathies among our people and their people. We've got a system whereby lawful, legal, law-abiding, respectable people are being arrested, and villains and criminals are being rewarded. Now, this is what Valerius Maximus speaks about. He says, basically, when virtue is no longer receives public approval, and vice no longer receives public censure, then society falls apart. Everything falls apart, and that's what we've got now. We're punishing good people, we're punishing virtue, and we're rewarding vice. And this is Valerius Maximus, who was a Roman writer, moralist, spoke about. And this is what we've got now, a ridiculous situation. If you want a bit of fun, a bit of light relief in your life, it's not all doom and gloom. Go online and do the UK nationality test. You can do some practice tests. You know, there's a site called UK Nationality Test. Actually, you go on there, and there's 48 tests, and each test has 20 questions, and they're quite funny, actually. A third of them are useful cultural stuff. I mean, you know, when is St. David's Day? When is Guy Fawkes Night? What is Guy Fawkes Night? Where did Constable paint his paintings? A third is all about tax evasion, TV license, all that sort of stuff. You know, obviously realize a lot of these immigrants don't want to pay their taxes. And then a third is complete and utter lunacy, political correct madness. And you can have some fun at this. And I failed this test dozens of times because I don't give the right answer on purpose, you know. And, you know, they keep telling you what sort of acts are criminal acts. And the answer is murder and race crimes. Murder and race crimes in the same sentence, you know, it's there.
Murder and criticizing Jews. Criticizing Jews. Sorry? Criticizing blacks. Criticizing Jews. It's I'm not surprised that they actually make that a part of the nationality test. But we're coming up to the near the end of the podcast here, Jez, and I know you wanted to let listeners know where they could hear you speak, or a date when they can hear you speak soon before we finish.
Yes, there's a conference in Northwest England organised by Boadicea Events, and it's on Saturday, January the 27th. Saturday, 27th of January, up in the Northwest there, organised by Boadicea Events, and I shall be there. I shall be there speaking. If you're my friend, come and speak to me. If you're my enemy, come and speak to me.
And hopefully we'll get some more information on that nearer to the time. Thanks for coming on, Jez. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Matthew Heimbach will be here tomorrow. So until then, I'll say God bless and hail victory.
You've been listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com. Come.